Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this hour of the Kid Zone here at the Radio Reading Service. This is Mark Wiesner.
And Jan Wiesner.
And today we take ourselves back into the book that we've been sharing with you, entitled Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, a novel written by Mildred D. Taylor, a Newbery Honor book. Great book, actually. I'm really enjoying it, and I hope you are as well. But before we get ourselves back into it, Jan's here to give us a little bit of a recap of where we left off.
Well, if you remember, several things have been happening. One was that Mama lost her job due to TJ complaining about her, and also Mr. Granger, who owns the plantation nearby, wanting to put pressure on them and cause them to lose their land that they have by not being able to pay the taxes. So that's a concern because they really lived on her money, and Papa is still traveling to Vicksburg with Mr. Morrison, who is their helper, to buy groceries and all for families. But a lot of the families have dropped out of this. They were all trying to get away from the Wallace's store, which overcharges them. And the Wallace's killed someone, a black man, but nothing's happening about it. So people were trying to punish them through money. But Mr. Granger came and said, listen, I'm going to take everyone down who's been going to Vicksburg to shop. You'll be put on the chain gang, and your families will starve. And so a lot of the people dropped out of going, having their money go to Vicksburg. Only seven families now. And so there's still that concern. Also, Cassie had trouble with a white girl and decided to get back at her. And her dad said, listen, in our world, you can be mad, but you can't show it and you can't do anything about it. And he says, if you do something to Lillian Jean and it gets back to her papa, he says, then I'm involved. And he says, and we will lose. No one else but us. And she said she understood. Well, what she did was she became Lillian Jean's buddy, walking to school, carrying her books and being subservient to her. And Lillian Jean was just loving it. And Lillian Jean started telling her gossip about all of Lillian Jean's friends and about which boy she's in love with, but he doesn't know it, etc. And Cassie waited till she had quite a lot of information, and then she took Lillian Jean aside into the woods, saying she had something to show her. And she threw Lillian Jean's books down on the ground and said, I'm not carrying them anymore. And Lillian Jean says, you have to. And she says, nope, because I have information on you. I can tell all of your friends all the mean and nasty things you've told about them. And everyone at your school will know which boy you're in love with if you ever say anything to anybody about this. Well, they had a little tussle and a little fight, and she beat Lillian Jean, but not so that anyone could see. And she said, really, you tell anyone and everyone's going to know your story. And so Lillian Jean has been quiet about it. And we're entering back into the story right now.
So let us begin. Seven families, including ours, still refuse to shop at the Wallace store, even with the threat of the chain gang. Mama said that the number was not significant enough to hurt the Wallaces, only enough to rile them. And she worried, afraid for Papa, Stacy, and Mr. Morrison to make the trip. But nothing she could say could change Papa's mind, and they left as planned on Wednesday morning, long before dawn. On Thursday, when they were to return, it began to rain, a hard, swelling summer rain, which brought a premature green darkness to the land and forced us to leave our hoeing of the cotton field and return to the house. As the thunder rumbled overhead, Mama peered out the window at the dark road.
Wonder what's keeping them,
she said, more to herself than to anyone else.
Probably got held up someplace,
said Big Ma.
Could have stopped to get out of the storm.
Mama turned from the window.
You're most likely right,
she agreed, picking up a pair of Christopher John's pants to mend. As the evening fell into total darkness, we grew silent. the boys and I sang very little, Mama and Big Ma concentrating on their sewing, their brows furrowed. My throat grew tight, and without knowing why, I was afraid. I was.
Mama?
I said.
They all right, ain't they?
Mama stared down at me.
Course they're all right. They're just a late, that's all. But Mama, you suppose maybe somebody done? I think you children better go to bed,
Mama said sharply, without letting me finish.
But I want to wait for Papa,
objected little man.
Me too,
said sleepy Christopher John.
You'll see him in the morning. Now get to bed.
Since there was nothing we could do but obey, we went to bed. But I could not sleep. A cold fear crept up my body, churning my stomach and tightening its grip on my throat. Finally, when I felt that I was going to be sick from it, I rose and padded silently into Mama and Papa's room. Mama was standing with her back to me, her arms folded, and Big Ma was still patching. Neither one of them heard the door swing open. I started to speak, but Mama was talking, and I decided not to interrupt her.
I've got a good mind to saddle Lady and go looking for them,
she said.
Now, Mary, what good would that do?
Big Ma questioned.
You running around out there on that mare by yourself in the darkness and rain? But something's happened to them. I can feel it. It's just in your mind, child.
Big Ma scoffed unconvincingly.
Them men folks all right. No,
said Mama, shaking her head.
The Wallaces aren't just in my mind. They...
She stopped and suddenly stood very still.
Mary, thought I heard something.
The dog started barking, and she turned, half running across the room. Pushing up the lock in the mad haste, she swung the door open and cried into the storm.
David! David!
Unable to stay put, I dashed across the room.
Cassie, what are you doing up, girl?
Asked Big Ma, swatting me as I passed her. But Mama, staring into the wet night, said nothing when I reached her side.
Is it them?
I asked. Out of the darkness, a round light appeared, moving slowly across the drive, and Mr. Morrison's voice drifted softly to us.
Go on, Stacy,
he said.
I got him.
Then Stacy, a flashlight in his hand, came into sight, followed by Mr. Morrison carrying Papa.
David!
Mama gasped. Her voice a frightened whisper. Big Ma, standing behind me, stepped back, pulled me with her. She stripped the bed to its sheets and ordered,
"Put him right here, Mr. Morrison."
As Mr. Morrison climbed the stairs, we could see that Papa's left leg stuck straight out, immobilized by a shotgun strapped to it with a rope. His head was wrapped in a rag through which the dark redness of his blood had seeped. Mr. Morrison eased Papa through the doorway and, careful not to hit the strapped leg, and laid him gently on the bed. Mama went immediately to the bed and took Papa's hand.
Hey, baby,
Papa said faintly. You know, I'm all right. Just got my leg broke. That's all. Wagon rolled over it, said Mr. Morrison, avoiding Mama's eyes. We better get that leg set. Didn't have time on the road.
But his head,
Mama said, her eyes questioning Mr. Morrison. But Mr. Morrison said nothing further, and Mama turned to Stacy.
You all right, son?
Yes, Stacy said, his face strangely ashen, his eyes on Papa.
Then get out of those wet things. Don't want you catching pneumonia. Cassie, you go to bed. I'll get a fire started,
said Big Ma, disappearing into the kitchen as Mama turned to the closet to find sheets for making a cast. But Stacy and I remained rooted, watching Papa, and did not move until Christopher John and Little Man made a sleepy entrance.
What's going on?
Asked Little Man, frowning into the light.
Go back to bed, children,
Mama said, rushing to keep them from coming further into the room. But before she could reach them, Christopher John spied Papa on the bed and shot past her.
Papa, you got back!
Mr. Morrison swung him upward before he could jar the bed.
What's the matter?
Asked Christopher John, wide awake now.
Papa, what's the matter? How come you got that thing on your head? Your papa's asleep,
said Mama, as Mr. Morrison set Christopher John back down.
Stacy, take them back to bed and get out of those clothes.
None of us stirred.
Move when I tell you,
Mama hissed impatiently, her face more worried than anger. Stacy herded us into the boys' room. As soon as the door closed behind us, I asked,
Stacy, how bad Papa hurt?
Stacy felt around for the lamp, lit it, then plopped wearily on the side of the bed. We huddled around him.
Well?
Stacy shook his head.
I don't know. His leg's busted up by the wagon, and he's shot. Shot?
Christopher John and little man exclaimed fearfully, but I was silent, too afraid now to speak, to think.
Mr. Morrison says he didn't think the bullet hurt him much. Says he think it just hit his skin here.
Stacy ran his forefinger along his right temple.
And didn't sink in nowhere. But who would shoot Papa?
Asked little man, greatly agitated.
Can't nobody just shoot Papa.
Stacy stood then and motioned Christopher John and little man under the covers.
I've said too much already. Cassie, go to bed.
I continued to sit, my mind unable to move.
Cassie, go on now like Mama said. How the wagon run over him? How he get shot?
I blurted out angrily, already plotting revenge against whoever had dared hurt my father.
Cassie, you go to bed. Ain't moving till you tell me. I'll call Mama,
he threatened.
She's too busy,
I said, folding my arms and feeling confident that he would tell the story. He went to the door and opened it. Christopher John, little man, and I watched him eagerly, but he soon closed the door and came back to the bed.
What are they doing?
Asked little man.
Big Ma's tending Papa's head. Well, what happened out there?
I repeated. Stacy sighed despairingly and sat down.
We was coming back from Vicksburg when the back wheels come off,
he said, his voice a hollow whisper.
It was already dark and it was raining too, and Papa and Mr. Morrison, they thought somebody done messed with them wheels for both of them to come off at the same time like they did. Then when I told them I'd seen two boys near the wagon when we was in Vicksburg, Papa said we didn't have much time to unhitch and unload the wagon like we should put them wheels back on. He thought somebody was coming after us. So after we found the wheels on the boats, Papa told me to hold the reins real tight on Jack to keep him still. Jack, he was real skittish because of the storm. Then Mr. Morrison went and lifted that wagon all by himself. And it was heavy, too, but Mr. Morrison lifted it up like it was nothing. Then Papa slipped the first wheel on, and that's when he got shot. But who?
I started.
A truck came up the road and stopped behind us while we was trying to get that wheel on, but didn't none of us hear it coming because of the rain and the thunder and all, and they didn't put their lights on until the truck stopped. Anyways, there was three men in that truck, and soon as Papa seen them, he reached for his shotgun. That's when they shot him, and he fell back with his left leg under the wagon. Then Jack reared and scared by the shot, and I couldn't hold him, and the wagon rolled over Papa's leg.
His voice cracked sharply, and he exploded guiltily.
It's my fault his leg's busted.
I thought on what he had said. And laying my hands on his shoulders, I said,
No, it ain't. It's them men's.
Stacy did not speak for a while, and I did not prod him to go on. Finally, he cleared his throat and continued huskily.
Soon's I tied Jack to a tree and run back to Papa, but Papa told me not to move him and to get down in the gully. After the men shot Papa, they came down trying to get Mr. Morrison, but he was too fast and strong for them. I couldn't see everything that happened because they didn't always stay in front of them headlights, but I did see Mr. Morrison pick up one of them men like he was nothing but a sack of chicken feathers and fling him down on the ground so hard it must have broke his back. Ain't never seen nothing like it before in my whole life. Then one of them other two had a gunshot at Mr. Morrison, but it didn't hit him. Mr. Morrison, he ducked away from the headlights into the darkness, and they went after him. Couldn't see nothing then,
he said, glancing towards the door where Papa lay.
Heard bones cracking, heard somebody cursing and crying, and then I couldn't hear nothing but the rain, and I was real scared, afraid they'd killed Mr. Morrison. But they didn't,
reminded little man, his eyes bright with excitement. Stacy nodded.
Next thing I seen was a man coming real slow-like into the headlights and pick up the man laying in the middle of the road, the one Mr. Morrison thrown down. He got him into the truck and then came back and helped the other one. That one looked like he had a broken arm, was all hanging all crazy-like at his side. Then they turned the truck around and drove away. Then what?
Little man inquired. Stacy shrugged.
Nothing. We put on the other wheel and come on home. Who was it?
I rasped, holding my breath. Stacy looked at me and said flatly,
The Wallaces, I think.
There was a fearful moment's silence. Then Christopher John, tears in his dark eyes, asked,
Stacy, is Papa gonna die? No, of course not,
denied Stacy too quickly.
But he was so still. I don't want Papa to die,
wailed little man.
He was just sleeping, like Mama said, that's all. Well, when he gonna wake up?
Cried Christopher John, the tears escaping down his plump cheeks.
In the morning,
said Stacy, putting a comforting arm around both Christopher John and little man.
Just you wait and see. He'll be just fine coming morning.
Stacy, still in his wet, muddy clothes, said nothing else, and neither did the rest of us. All the questions had been answered. Yet we feared, and we sat silently listening to the rain, soft now upon the roof, and watching the door behind which lay Papa lay, wishing for the morning. Chapter 10 How does it look? Asked Papa, as I passed through the sitting room on my way out the side door. Over a week had passed since he had been injured, and this was his first morning up. He was seated by the cold fireplace, his head still bandaged, his broken leg resting on a wooden chair. His eyes were on Mama at her desk. Mama put down her pencil and frowned at the open ledger before her. She glanced at me absently and waited until I had closed the screen door behind me, and then she said,
David, do you think we should go into this now? You're still not well.
I'm well enough to know that there's not much left. Now tell me. I hopped down the steps and sat on the bottom one. Mama was silent for a moment before she answered him.
With Hammer's half of the mortgage money, we've got enough to meet the June payment.
Nothing more?
A couple of dollars, that's all.
They were both silent.
You think we should write Hammer and borrow some money?
Mama asked. Papa did not answer right away. No. He said finally, I still don't want him to know about this thing. If he knows I'm not on the railroad, he'll want to know why not. And I don't want to risk that temper of his when he finds out what the Wallaces have done. Mama sighed.
I guess you're right.
I know I am, said Papa. Things like they are, he come down here wild and angry. He'll get himself hung. Long as things don't get no worse, we can make it without him. We'll meet that June note with the money we got there. He paused a moment. We'll probably have to sell a couple of the cows and their calves to make them July and August notes, maybe even the old sow. But by the end of August, we should have enough cotton to make that September payment. Of course, we'll probably have to go all the way to Vicksburg to get it ginned. Can't hardly use Harlan Granger's gin this year. There was silence again. Then Pompous said,
David, Mama's been talking about going into Strawberry to the market next.
No, Pompous said, not letting her finish. too much bad feeling there.
I told her that.
I'll talk to her. Anything we gotta have before the first cotton come in?
Well, you picked up batteries and kerosene on that last trip, but what we're going to need more than anything is some insecticide to spray the cotton. The bugs are getting pretty bad.
What about food?
Our flour and sugar and baking soda and such are low, but we'll make out. We don't have to have biscuits and cornbread every day. We're out of pepper and there's not much salt, but we don't just have to have those either. And the coffee's all gone. The garden's coming along nicely, though. There's no worry there.
No worry, Papa muttered as both of them grew quiet. Then suddenly there was a sharp explosion as something had been struck with an angry force. If only this leg wasn't busted.
Don't let Stacy hear you saying that, David,
Mama cautioned softly.
You know he blames himself about your leg.
I told the boy it wasn't his fault. He just wasn't strong enough to hold Jack.
I know that, but still he blames himself.
Papa laughed strangely. Ain't this something? Then Walzas aim a gun at my head and I get my leg broke. My boy's blaming himself for it. Why, I feel like taking a bullwhip to all three of them Walzas and not stopping till my arm gets so tired I can't raise it one more time.
You're sounding like Hammer.
Am I? Well, a lot of times I feel like doing things Hammer's way. I think I get a powerful lot of satisfaction from whipping Caleb Wallace and them brothers of his.
Hammer's way would get you killed and you know it, so stop talking like that. Don't we already have enough to worry about? Besides, both Thurston and Dewberry Wallace are still laid up, so I hear. Some folks even say that Dewberry's back is broken. In any case, Mr. Morrison must have hurt them pretty bad.
Where is he, by the way? I haven't seen him this morning. There was an instant of silence before Mama answered.
Out looking for work since dawn.
He ain't gonna find nothing around here. I told him that.
I know,
agreed Mama.
But he says he's gotta try it. David?
Mama stopped. And then she spoke again. Her voice grew faint. As if she hesitated to say what was on her mind.
David, don't you think he ought to go? I don't want him to. But if after what he did to the Wallaces, I'm afraid for him.
He knows what could happen, Mary. But he wants to stay, and frankly, we need him here. Don't pester him about it.
But David, if...
Before Mama finished, I spied Mr. Morrison coming west from Smellings Creek. I left the step and hurried to meet him.
Hello, Mr. Morrison,
I shouted as Jack pulled the wagon up the drive. Hello, Cassie, Mr. Morrison greeted me. Your papa awake?
Yes, sir. He's sitting out of bed this morning.
Didn't I tell you nothing could keep him down?
Yes, sir, you did.
He stepped from the wagon and walked towards the house.
Mr. Morrison, you want me to unhitch Jack for you?
No, Cassie. Leave him be. I gotta talk to your papa, then I'll be back.
Hey, old Jack,
I said, patting the mules I watched Mr. Morrison enter the side door. I thought of returning to my seat on the steps, but decided against it. Instead, I remained with Jack, thoughtfully digesting all I had heard, until Mr. Morrison came from the house. He went into the barn, then reappeared with a planter, a plow-like tool, with a small round container for dropping seeds attached to its middle. He put the planter into the back of the wagon.
Where are you going now, Mr. Morrison?
Down to Mr. Wiggins' place. I seen Mr. Wiggins this morning, and he asked to use your papa's planter. He ain't got no wagon, so I told him I'd ask your papa if it was all right. I'd bring it to him.
Ain't it kind of late for seeding?
Well, not for what he got in mind. He thought he'd plant some summer corn. It'll be ready come September.
Mr. Morrison, can I go with you?
I asked as he climbed up the wagon. Well, I'd be right pleased for your company, Cassie, but you'll have to ask your mama. I ran to the house. The boys were now in Mama and Papa's room, and when I asked if I could go up to Little Willie's with Mr. Morrison, Little Man and Christopher John, of course, wanted to go too.
Mr. Morrison said it'd be all right, Mama. Well, don't you get in his way. Stacy, you going?
Stacy sat across from Papa, looking despondently at the broken leg. Go on, son, said Papa gently. There's nothing to do here. Give you a chance to talk to Little Willie.
You sure there ain't something I can do for you, Papa?
Just go and have yourself a good ride over to Little Willie's. Since it had been my idea to ask to go, I claimed a seat beside Mr. Morrison, and the boys climbed in back. Little Willie's family lived on their own 40 acres about 2 miles east of the Great Faith. It was a fine morning for a ride, and the 6 miles there sped by quickly, with Mr. Morrison singing in his bass voices, and Christopher John, Little Man, and me joining in wherever we could as we passed cotton fields abloom in flowers of white and red and pink. Stacy, being in one of his moods, did not sing, and we let him be. We stayed less than an hour at the Wiggins farm, then headed home again. We had just passed Great Faith and were approaching the Jefferson Davis School Road when a ragged pickup came into view. Very quietly, Mr. Morrison said, Cassie, get in back.
But why, Mr. Morrison?
Do, quick. Cassie, like I say. His voice was barely above a friendly whisper, but there was an urgency to it, and I obeyed, scrambling over the seat to join the boys. You all stay down now. The truck braked noisily with a grating shriek of steel. We stopped. The boys and I peeped over the edge of the wagon. The truck had veered across the road, blocking us. The truck door swung open, and Caleb Wallace stepped out, pointing a long, condemning finger at Mr. Morrison. He swayed, unspeaking, for a long, terrible moment, then sputtered, You big black person! I'd have cut your heart out for what you done. My brother's laid up like they is, and you still running around free as a white man. Downright sinful, that's what it is. Why, I ought to gun you down right where you sit. You going to move your truck? Caleb Wallace gazed up at Mr. Morrison, then at the truck, as if trying to comprehend the connection between the two. That truck in your way, boy? Are you going to move it? I'll move it all right when I get good and ready. He stopped abruptly, his eyes bulging in a terrified stare as Mr. Morrison climbed down from the wagon. Mr. Morrison's long shadow fell over him, and for a breathless second, Mr. Morrison towered dangerously near him. But as the fear grew white on Caleb Wallace's face, Mr. Morrison turned without a word and peered into the truck.
What's he looking for?
I whispered.
Probably a gun,
said Stacy. Mr. Morrison circled the truck, studying it closely. Then he returned to its front, and bending at the knees, with his back against the grill, he positioned his large hands beneath the bumper. Slowly, his muscles flexing tightly against the thin shirt and the sweat popping off his skin like oil on water, he lifted the truck in one fluid, powerful motion until the front was several inches off the ground and slowly walked it to the left side of the road, where he set it down as gently as a sleeping child. Then he moved to the rear of the truck and repeated the feat. Caleb Wallace was mute. Christopher John, Little Man, and I stared, open mouth, and even Stacy, who had witnessed Mr. Morrison's phenomenal strength before, gazed in wonder. It took Caleb several minutes to regain his voice. We were far down the road, almost out of hearing, when his frenzied cry of hate reached us. One of these nights, you watch. I'm gonna get out for what you've done. You just watch. One night, real soon. When we reached home and told Mama and Papa, Big Ma, what had happened, Mama said to Mr. Morrison,
I told you before I was afraid for you, and today Caleb Wallace's would have hurt you and the children.
Mr. Morrison looked squarely into Mama's eyes. Ms. Logan, Caleb Wallace is one of them folks who can't do nothing by himself. He got to have a lot of other folks backing him up, plus a loaded gun. And I knew there wasn't no gun, leastway not in that truck. I checked.
But if you stay, he'll get somebody and they'll try to take you like he said.
Miss Logan, don't ask me to go. Mama reached out, laying a slender hand on Mr. Morrison's.
Mr. Morrison, you're part of us now. I don't want you hurt because of us.
Mr. Morrison lowered his eyes and looked around the room until his gaze rested on the boys and me. I ain't never had no children of my own. I think sometimes if I had, I'd have wanted a son and a daughter just like you and Mr. Logan, and grandbabies like these babies of yours.
But, Mr. Morrison, the Wallaces.
Mary, said Papa quietly, let it be. Mama looked at Papa, her lips still poised to speak. Then she said no more, but the worry lines remained creased upon her brow. August dawned blue and hot. The heat swooped low over the land, clinging like an invisible shroud. And through it, people moved slowly, lethargically, as if underwater. In the ripening fields, the drying cotton and corn stretched tiredly skyward, awaiting the coolness of a rain that occasionally threatened, but did not come. And the land took on a baked brown look. To escape the heat, the boys and I often ambled into the coldness of the forest after the chores were done. There, while the cows and their calves grazed nearby, we sat on the banks of the pond, our backs propped against an old hickory tree, our feet dangling lazy in the cool water, and waited for a watermelon brought from the garden to chill. Sometimes Jeremy joined us there, making his way through the deep forest land from his own farm over a mile away, but the meetings were never planned. None of our parents would have liked that.
How's your papa?
He asked one day as he plopped down beside us.
He's all right,
said Stacy.
Except in his legs bothering him in this heat, itching a lot. But Mama says that's a sign it's getting well. That's good,
murmured Jeremy.
Too bad he had to get hurt when he'd done so he couldn't go back on the railroad.
Stacy stirred uneasily, looked at Christopher John, little man and me, reminding us with his eyes that we were not to speak about the Wallace's part in the Papa's injury, and said, Jeremy was silent a moment and then stuttered.
Some folks say they glad he got hurt, glad he can't go make that railroad money. Who said that?
I cried, jumping up from the bank.
Just tell me who said it, and I'll rem...
Cassie.
Sit down and be quiet,
Stacy ordered. Reluctantly, I did as I was told, wishing that this business about the Wallaces and Papa's injuries were not so complex. It seemed to me that since the Wallaces had attacked Papa and Mr. Morrison, the simplest thing to do would be to tell the sheriff and have them put in jail. But Mama said that things didn't work that way. She explained that as long as the Wallaces embarrassed by their injuries at the hands of Mr. Morrison, did not make an official complaint about the incident, then we must remain silent also. If we did not, Mr. Morrison could be charged with attacking white men, which could possibly end in him being sentenced to the chain gang, or worse.
I ain't the one said it, Cassie,
stammered Jeremy by way of apology.
Well, whoever's saying it ought not be,
I said huffily. Jeremy nodded thoughtfully and changed the subject.
Y'all seen TJ lately?
Stacy frowned, considering whether or not he should answer. There had been much talk concerning TJ and the Sims brothers, all but bad. Mo Turner's father had told Papa that TJ had stopped by with the Sims once, and after they had left, he had discovered his watch missing. The Laniers had had the same experience with a locket. That TJ done real bad, turned real bad, Mr. Lanier had said, and I don't want nothing to do with no thief, especially no thief running around with white boys. Finally, Stacy said,
don't see him much no more.
Jeremy pulled at his lip.
I see him all the time. Too bad,
I sympathized. Stacy glanced reproachfully at me, then lay flat upon the ground, his head resting in the cushion of his hands, clasped under his head.
It sure is beautiful up there,
he said, pointing, changing the subject again. The rest of us lay back down, too. Overhead, the branches of the walnut and the hickory trees met like long green fans sheltering us. Several feet away, the persistent sun made amber rows of shimmering sunlight upon the pond. A stillness hovered in the high air, soft, quiet, peaceful.
I think when I grow up, I'm going to build me a house and some trees and just live there all the time,
said Jeremy.
How you going to do that?
Asked little man.
Oh, I'll find me some real strong trees and just build. I figure I'll have the trunk of one tree in the bedroom and the other in the kitchen. How come you want to live in a tree for?
Christopher John inquired.
It's so peaceful up there and quiet. Cool, too,
answered Jeremy.
Especially at night. How you know how cool it is at night?
I said, Jeremy's face frightened.
Because I got my bedroom up there.
We looked at him unbelievingly.
I do, really. Built it myself and sleeps up there. Come these hot nights, I just climb in my tree and it's like going into another world. Why, I can see and hear things up there that I bet you only the squirrels and the birds can see and hear. Sometimes I think I can even see all the way over to y'all's place. Aw, shoot, boy, you're a story,
I said.
Your place too far away and you know it.
Jeremy's face dropped.
Well, maybe I can't see it, but that don't keep me from pretending I do.
He was silent for a second, then hopped up suddenly, his face bright again.
Hey, why don't y'all come over and see it? My pa's gone all day, and it's lots of fun, and I could show y'all. No,
said Stacy quietly, his eyes still in the trees overhead. Jeremy sat back down, deflated.
Just wanted y'all to see it, that's all.
For a while, he looked hurt by Stacy's cold refusal. Then, seeming to accept it as part of the things that were, he again took up his position and volunteered good-naturedly.
If y'all ever get a chance to build yourselves a treehouse, just let me know and I'll help you. It's just as cool.
Papa sat on the bench in the barn, his broken leg stretched awkwardly before him, mending one of Jack's harnesses. He had been there since early morning, a frown line carved deep in his forehead, quietly mending those things which needed mending. Papa told us not to bother him, and we stayed away from the barn as long as we could, but by late afternoon we drifted naturally to it and began our chores. Papa disappeared within himself, and he took no notice of us at first, but shortly afterwards he looked up, watching us closely. When the chores were almost finished, Mr. Morrison arrived from Strawberry, where he had gone to make the August mortgage payment. He entered the barn slowly and handed Papa an envelope. Papa glanced up questioningly, then ripped it open. As he read the letter, his jaw set tightly, and when he finished, he smashed his fist so hard against the bench that the boys and I stopped what we were doing, aware that something was terribly wrong. "They tell you?" he asked of Mr. Morrison, his voice curt, angry. Mr. Morrison added, "I tried to get them to wait till after cotton picking, but they told me it was due and payable immediately. Them they words." "Harlem Granger," said quietly. He reached for his cane and stood up. "You feel up to going back to Strawberry tonight?" "I can make it, but I don't know if this old mule can." "Then hitch Lady to it," he said, motioning to the mare. He turned then and went to the house. The boys and I followed, not quite sure of what was happening. Papa entered the kitchen. We stayed on the porch, peering through the screen.
"David, something the matter, son?"
"The bank called up the note. I'm going to Strawberry."
"Called up the note?"
echoed Big Ma.
"Oh, Lord, not that, too."
Mama stared at Papa, fear in her eyes.
"You going now?"
"Now," he said, leaving the kitchen for their room. Mama's voice trailed him.
"David, it's too late. The bank's closed by now. You can't see anyone until morning."
We could not hear Papa's reply, but Mama's voice rose sharply.
"You want to be out on that road again in the middle of the night after what happened? You want us worried to death about you?"
"Mary, don't you understand they're trying to take the land?" Papa said, his voice rising too, so that we could hear.
"Don't you understand I don't want you dead?"
We could hear nothing else. But a few minutes later, Papa came out and told Mr. Morrison to unhitch Lady. They would go to Strawberry in the morning. The next day, Papa and Mr. Morrison were gone before I arose. When they returned in the late afternoon, Papa sat wearily down at the kitchen table with Mr. Morrison beside him. Rubbing his hands over his thick hair, he said, "I called Hammer."
"What did you tell him?"
Mama asked. "Just that the note's been called. He said he'd get the money."
"How?"
"He didn't say, and I didn't ask. Just said he'd get it."
"And Mr. Higgins at the bank, David?"
said Big Ma.
"What'd he have to say?"
"Said our credit's no good anymore."
"We aren't even hurting the Wallaces now,"
Mama said with acid anger.
"Harlan Granger's got no need."
"Baby, you know he's got a need," Papa said, pulling her to him. "He's got a need to show us where we stand in the scheme of things. He's got a powerful need to do that. Besides, he still wants this place."
"But, son, that mortgage give us 4 more years.
Papa laughed dryly. "Mama, you want me to take it to court?" But Big Ma sighed and placed her hands on Papa's.
"What if Hammer can't get the money?"
Papa did not look at her, but at Mr. Morrison instead. "Don't worry, Mama. We ain't going to lose the land. Trust me." On the third Sunday of August, the annual revival began. Revivals were always very serious, yet gay, and long-planned for affairs, which brought pots and pans from out-of-the-way shelves, mothballed dresses, and creased pants from hidden chests, and all the people from the community and the neighboring communities up the winding red schoolhouse road to Great Faith Church. The revival ran for 7 days, and it was an occasion everyone looked forward to, for it was more than just church services. It was the year's only planned social event, disrupting the humdrum of everyday country life. Teenagers courted openly. Adults met with relatives and friends they had not seen since the previous year's big meeting and children ran almost free. As far as I was concerned, the best part of the revival was the very first day. After the first of these three services was dismissed, the mass of humanity, which had squished its way into the sweltering interior of the small church, poured onto the school grounds, and the women proudly set out their dinners in the backs of wagons and on the lawn tables circling the church. Then it was a feast to remember. Brimming bowls of turnip greens and black bean, black-eyed peas with hammocks, thick slices of last winter's sugar-cured ham, and strips of broiled ribs, crisply fried chicken, and morsels of golden squirrel and rabbit, flask, flaky buttermilk pancakes and crusty cornbread, flat slabs of sweet potato pie, and butter-bound cake, and so much more, well for the taking. No matter how long the pantry supplies lasted, each family always managed to contribute something as the churchgoers made the rounds from table to table. Hard times were forgotten, at least for the day. The boys and I had just loaded our plates for the first time and taken our seats under an old walnut when Stacy put down his plate and stood up again.
"What's the matter?"
I asked, stuffing my mouth with cornbread. Stacy frowned into the sun.
"That man walking up the road."
I took a moment to look up, then picked up my drumstick.
"So? He looks like Uncle Hammer!"
he cried and dashed away. I hesitated, watching him, reluctant to leave my plate unless it really was Uncle Hammer. When Stacy reached the man and hugged him, I put the plate down and ran across the lawn to the road. Christopher John, with his plate still in hand, and little man ran after me.
"Uncle Hammer, where's your car?"
little man asked after we had all hugged him.
"Sold it,"
he said.
"Sold it?"
we cried in unison.
"But why?"
asked Stacy. "Needed the money," Uncle Hammer said flatly. As we neared the church, Papa met us and embraced Uncle Hammer. "I wasn't expecting you to come all the way down here."
You
expected me to send that much money by mail? Could have wired it. Don't trust that either. Well, how'd you get it? Borrowed some of it. Sold a few things," he said with a shrug. Then he nodded towards Papa's legs. "How'd you do that?" Papa's eyes met Uncle Hammer's, and he smiled faintly. "I was sort of hoping you wouldn't ask that."
"Papa?"
I said.
"Uncle Hammer sold the Packard."
Papa's smile faded. "I didn't mean for that to happen, Hammer." Uncle Hammer put his arm around Papa. "What good's a car? It can't grow cotton. You can't build a home on it. And you can't raise 4 fine babies in it." Papa nodded, understanding. "Now you gonna tell me about that leg?" Papa stared at the smiling, at the milling throng of people around the dinner tables. "Let's get you something to eat first," he said. "Then I'll tell you. Maybe it'll set better with some of the things with this good food in your stomach." Because Uncle Hammer was leaving early Monday morning, the boys and I were allowed to stay up much later than usual to be with him. Long hours after we should have been in bed, we sat on the front porch, lit only by the whiteness of the full moon, and listened to the comforting sounds of Papa's and Uncle Hammer's voices mingling once again. "We'll go up to Strawberry and make that payment first thing tomorrow," said Papa. "I don't think I'd better go all the way to Vicksburg with this leg, but Mr. Morrison will take you there. See you to the train." "He don't have to do that," replied Uncle Hammer. "I can make it to Vicksburg all right by myself. But I'd rest easier if I knew you was on the train headed due north." not off getting yourself ready to do something foolish. Uncle Hammer grunted. There ain't a thing foolish to do what I'd like to do to them Wallaces. Harlem Granger, either. There was nothing to say to how he felt, and no one tried. What's your plan to do for money? Uncle Hammer asked after a while. The cotton looks good, said Papa. We do well on it. We'll make out all right. Uncle Hammer was quiet a moment before he observed. Just tightening the belt some more, huh? When Papa did not answer, Uncle Hammer said, Maybe I better stay. No, said Papa adamantly. You do better in Chicago. May do better, but I worry a lot. He paused, pulling at his ear. Come on, come through Strawberry with a fellow from up in the Vicksburg. Things seem worse than usual up there. It gets hot like this, and folks get dissatisfied with life. They start looking around for somebody to take it out on. I don't want it to be you. I don't think it will be, said Papa, unless you stay. In the morning, after the men had gone, Big Ma said to Mama,
I wish Hammer could have stayed longer. It's better he went,
said Mama. Big Ma nodded.
I know, things like they is, it don't take but a little or nothing to set things off, and Hammer, with that temper he got, could do it still.
She murmured wistfully.
I sure wish he could have stayed.
On the last night of the revival, the sky took on a strange yellowish cast. The air felt close, suffocating, and no wind stirred.
What do you think, David?
Mama asked as she and Papa stood in the front porch looking at the sky.
You think we should go?
Papa leaned against his cane. It's going to storm all right, but it may not come till late on over in the night. They decided we would go. Most families had come to the same decision, for the church grounds were crowded with wagons when we arrived. Brother Logan, one of the deacons, called as Papa stepped awkwardly down from the wagon. Reverend Gabson wants us to get the meeting started soon as we can, so we can dismiss early and get on home before this storm hits. All right, Papa said, directing us towards the church. But as we neared the building, we were stopped by the Laniers. As the grown-ups talked, little Willie Wiggins and Mo Turner, standing with several other boys, motioned to Stacy from the road. Stacy wandered away to speak to them, and Christopher John, Little Man, and I went too.
Guess who we seen,
said Little Willie as Stacy walked up. But before Stacy could venture a guess, Little Willie answered his own question.
TJ and them Sims brothers. Where?
Asked Stacy.
Over there. They parked by the classrooms. Look, here they come.
All eyes followed the direction of Little Willie's finger. Through the settling dusk, three figures ambled with assurance across the wide lawns, the two Sims on the outside, TJ in the middle.
How come he bringing them here?
Asked Mo Turner angrily. Stacy shrugged.
Don't know, but I guess we'll find out. He looks different,
I remarked, when I could see TJ more distinctly. He was dressed in a pair of long, unpatched trousers, and, as sticky hot as it was, he wore a suit coat and a tie and a hat cocked jauntily to one side.
I suppose he do look different,
murmured Mo bitterly.
I'd look different, too, if I'd been busy stealing other folks' stuff. Well, what we got here?
Exclaimed TJ loudly as he approached.
Y'all gonna welcome us to y'all's revival services? What are you doing here, TJ?
Stacy asked. TJ laughed.
I got a right to come to my own church, ain't I? See all my old friends?
His eyes wandered over the group, but no one showed signs of being glad to see him. His wide grin shrank a little, then spying me, he patted my face with his moist hand.
Hey, Cassie girl, how you doing?
I slapped his hand away.
Don't you come messing with me, TJ,
I warned. Again, he laughed, then said soberly,
well, this is a fine how do you do. I come all the way over here to introduce my friends R.W. and Melvin to y'all, and y'all acting like you ain't got no manners at all. Yeah, old R.W. and Melvin,
he said, rolling the Sims name slowly off his tongue to bring to our attention that he had not bothered to place a Mr. before either.
They've been mighty fine friends to me, better than all of y'all. Look, see here what they give me. And he tugged at his suit coat. Pretty nice stuff, huh? Everything I want, they give me because they really likes me. I'm their friend.
He turned to the Simses.
Ain't that right, R.W. Melvin?
Melvin nodded, a condescending smirk on his face, which was lost on TJ.
Anything, just anything at all I want. They'll get it for me, including...
He hesitated, as if he were unsure whether or not he was going too far, then plunged on.
Including that pearl-handled pistol in Burnett's mercantile.
R.W. stepped forward and slapped a reassuring hand on TJ's shoulder. That's right, TJ. You name it, and you've got it. TJ grinned widely. Stacy turned away in disgust.
Come on,
he said.
Service about to start. Hey, what's the matter with y'all?
TJ yelled as the group turned en masse and headed for the church. I glanced back at him. Was he really such a fool? All right, TJ, said Melvin as we walked away. We come down here like you asked. Now you come on into Strawberry with us like you promised.
It didn't make no difference,
muttered TJ. What? Said R.W. You coming, ain't you? You still want that pearl-handled pistol, don't you?
Yeah, but...
Then come on, he ordered, turning with Melvin and headed for the pickup. But TJ did not follow immediately. He remained standing in the middle of the compound, his face puzzled and undecided. I had never seen him look more desolately alone, and for a fleeting second I felt almost sorry for him. When I reached the church steps, I looked back again. TJ was still there, an indistinct blur blending into the gathering dusk, and I began to think that perhaps he would not go with the Simses. But then the rude squawk of the truck's horn blasted the quiet evening, and TJ turned his back on us and fled across the field. Well, with that line, we're going to have to bring this hour to a close. It's a pleasure to be with you each Saturday afternoon. This has been Mark Wiesner.
And Jan Wiesner. We hope you have a great Saturday.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.